This is Nightline.
Tonight, they appeared to be the perfect couple, Bob and Gail. Except Bob, the successful doctor, had a dark side.
The Barenbaum story, when you get right down to it, is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
There were plenty of warning signs.
Bob tried to kill the cat. He had the cat in the toilet, choking it with its head submerged underwater.
Then Gail disappeared without a trace.
Bob calls me. He says, is Gail still with you?
No body to bury, no proof of a murder.
He feels completely safe, completely confident that he's gotten away with murder.
But would he? This special edition of Nightline, Do No Harm.
Fits the tall, dark, and handsome, this perfect Renaissance man.
The Barenbaum story, when you get right down to it, is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Tell me about your sister. What was she like?
Gail was a very gentle soul.
Gail Beth Katz was born on March 8, 1956, the oldest of three children. Her family lived in Brooklyn, New York, before settling on Long Island.
I was 1 year behind Gail in school. We were best friends. She was beautiful, smart, and unfortunately anxious. There was a little bit of a depression early in life. She never thought she was good enough. She never knew how good she was.
Gail hits a low point in 1979 and attempts suicide.
In my heart of hearts, I believe it was more of a really, really big cry for help than a true suicide attempt.
Over time, Elaine says Gail appeared to bounce back, landing a job at an ad company and building her way back up.
And that's when one of her friends decides that she's got to introduce Gail to Dr. Robert Barenbaum.
Robert Barenbaum met Gail during his surgical residency in New York.
He's close to her age, Jewish, classical guitar player. He spoke several languages. He was a gourmet cook, an expert skier. He had mastered instructor-level piloting.
The doctor swept Gail off her feet immediately.
However, in spite of all of his pluses, there were problems with the relationship, and it was obvious early on.
When we would be together with them as a couple, he would be very controlling of her.
But Gail had made up her mind. Bob was marrying material, and the two get engaged. But then, all of a sudden, those red flags about Gail's seemingly perfect fiancé become four alarm sirens.
During the summer of 82, I get the hysterical call from my sister. Bob tried to kill the cat. He had the cat in the toilet, choking it with its head submerged underwater.
He was offended because she seemed to love the cat more than she loved Bob.
No, 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 Elaine. We're going to get rid of the cat, and then everything's going to be fine because he's going to believe that I love him. And I'm like, no, not really. You really have to give it to Bob.
Gail and Bob marry in 1982, eventually moving into a two-bedroom apartment on Manhattan's Upper East Side in a building made famous on the Jeffersons TV sitcom.
It might have looked like the perfect couple, but the reality was they were fighting a lot.
Bob had rules, and you better follow those rules.
The following year, Elaine says Bob violently attacked Gail after he saw her smoking on their apartment balcony, strangling her until she passed out. She reported the incident to the police.
If this had happened in 2021, Robert Barenbaum would have been in handcuffs immediately. The fact that this was 1983, nothing was done about it.
Gail demands that Bob see a therapist. He goes to Dr. Michael Stone, who is so alarmed by Bob that he writes a letter.
The letter went as far as being a hold harmless letter. He didn't want to be held liable for not warning her about the danger.
The letter says, if I do not heed this advice, I must accept the consequences, including the possibility of personal injury or death at the hands of my husband, and absolve Dr. Stone of responsibility for any such eventuality.
Were you aware of the letter?
She's like, it says he's a psychopath and that he's gonna kill me.
Why in the world would she stay with this guy after she received that kind of warning?
I think she didn't believe it. She said to me that I want to get divorced. You know, he really has to do right by me. And if he doesn't, I am going to publicize this letter and it's going to ruin him.
2 years later, on July 7th, 1985, Gail goes missing. Bob says they had an argument. She left in a huff, and he went to New Jersey to attend his nephew's birthday party.
Bob calls me. He says, is Gail still with you? I said, what do you mean, is Gail still with me? I left her yesterday at 5 o'clock. My heart went into my throat.
She's not with me, and she's not with my parents. And at that moment, I know that my sister's dead. And if she's not alive, there's only one person who is a likely suspect to murder her, and it's Bob. There's no other suspect.
On Monday, July 8, 1985, about 9 in the evening, Robert Bierenbaum came into the precinct to report his wife, Gail, missing.
Bob tells police that they had an argument and she came here to the park?
Yes. And by the very following weekend, we had missing posters made of Gail.
It was almost like pulling teeth to get Robert Bierenbaum to help.
Authorities continue to search for Gail and ultimately determine she did not die by suicide in the park. Weeks after his wife's disappearance, Bierenbaum is seen partying in the Hamptons. He's even started dating.
Even his dress changed from L.L. Bean to Saturday Night Fever. This wasn't the concerned husband.
Gail's family gets their hopes up about holding Bob accountable when investigators make a shocking discovery at a New Jersey airfield.
Robert Bierenbaum, the day his wife disappeared, drove to Caldwell Airport sometime in the afternoon, flew a plane for over an hour and a half, returned to the airport, and then went to his sister's house for the party. The working theory was that he folded her up, put her in a duffel bag, came out to where we are today, rented his plane, loaded her in the plane, flew out over the ocean, and dumped her in the ocean.
But the Manhattan district attorney tells Gail's family it's not enough to bring charges against Bob.
It was a death sentence for my parents.
Then in May of 1989, 3 years after the investigation went cold, a torso washes up on Staten Island. An X-ray technician compares it with old scans of Gail's and says it's a match.
Now we have a body to bury. We have some closure.
Elaine remains adamant in her pursuit of justice for her sister.
I would leave messages on his answering machine, you know, telling the woman he was living with, he's dangerous, you know, be careful.
Elaine's relentless efforts appear to pay off. In 1989, Robert Bierenbaum pulls up stakes and leaves New York City behind. Coming up,
he feels confident that he's gotten away with murder.
Robert Bierenbaum had absolutely no idea it was coming.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.
Dr. Robert Birenbaum leaves New York City in 1989. The district attorney has closed its investigation into Gail's death without bringing any charges. He starts a new life in Las Vegas as a hotshot plastic surgeon, even joins a charity providing free medical care to disadvantaged children.
He kept his secrets to himself.
He gets a girlfriend, Stephanie Youngblood.
The first year was perfect. Fun, fun, fun. We went on a lot of ski trips.
Stephanie notices a tag on his luggage that says Gail Birenbaum and asks who that is.
He got kind of emotional and he told me he had been married before and they had a big fight and she took off for Central Park and she disappeared.
Stephanie says Birenbaum told her he had been thoroughly investigated by the cops and cleared of all wrongdoing.
The way he told the story, it was believable.
Bob's image on paper was real, but cracks started to appear.
One time he erupts after she asks for a glass of wine and the bottle sprayed everywhere.
My life was flashing in front of my eyes.
Alarmed by that incident, Stephanie says she demanded they see a therapist.
We only had one session, and she goes, there are issues there, that my life could be in danger with him. And so I started to build a strategy to leave.
Stephanie does leave, and Bob quickly moves on, marrying a gynecologist in June of 1996. He moves with his new wife, Janet, to Minot, North Dakota, where they both work at Trinity Medical Center.
In November of 98, Janet and Bob had a baby daughter.
After he left Las Vegas and moved to North Dakota, I'm confident that he thought that he's never going to have to deal with this ever again.
While Bob was building a new life in the Dakotas, back in New York, there was somebody who couldn't forget the disappearance of Gail. That guy was Andy Rosenzweig, the chief investigator of the Manhattan District Attorney's Office.
The DA's office has just created a cold case unit. Rosenzweig assigned Steve Sirocco and Dan Bibb to the Birenbaum case.
The first thing that stood out to me when I reviewed the file were the flight records. There's the explanation why Gail is not around anymore.
That coupled with his visits to his psychiatrist, Dr. Michael Stone, I called Stone, cold called him, and he said, of course he killed her. Dr. Birenbaum's a dangerous psychopath. This case has been burning on my brain.
In the summer of 1998, Gail's body was exhumed, but the DNA of that torso did not match Gail's.
I am so devastated. And I looked up at Dan and at Steve, and I said, now you better get a conviction.
In late November of 98, we decided to send investigators to North Dakota to see if we could get some kind of statement. He's feeling as safe as you possibly can. All of a sudden now, he sees these guys from Manhattan telling him, we're here because we're reinvestigating your wife's disappearance.
Then, in September of 1999, 14 years after Gail's disappearance, a grand jury indicts Robert Barenboim for second-degree murder. Robert Barenboim will be returning to New York City, this time to stand trial for Gail's murder.
It was an unusual case with a lot of difficult legal issues. And one of them would be, of course, that there was no body, because then you wonder how the prosecution is going to prove that there was, in fact, a murder.
It was a key thing for the prosecution to let the jury see how Barenboim had abused his wife during their marriage, including the 1983 choking incident.
Gail's sister and friend testify about that ominous letter from Dr. Stone. Another critical part of the prosecution's case, the discovery that Barenboim had flown his plane on the afternoon of July 7th, the day Gail went missing. Prosecutors are able to show jurors Barenboim's own personal flight log, where the 7 for July had been apparently altered to an 8.
A big hurdle for the prosecution was to persuade the jury that someone could actually fly a plane and push a body out the door and not crash.
The sergeant showed that not only was it possible to dispose of the 110-pound bag, that it actually was very easy. He could do it either from the pilot's door, which he did, or from the passenger door.
Over the course of the trial, the prosecution calls 34 witnesses.
The defense did go into other reasons why she could have gone missing. They brought up mental health issues, the possible drug use or infidelities.
Ultimately, I think what they did led nowhere.
15 years after Gail's disappearance, the case finally goes to a jury. After just 5.5 hours of deliberation, there's a verdict.
The foreperson stands up and says, guilty. And there was a buzz in the courtroom.
We trembled and we cried.
There are very few cases in which someone has been a law-abiding citizen and has done good things. So I gave him 20 years to life.
He spent the first 10 years behind bars trying to prove his innocence and get his verdict overturned. He appealed in state courts, federal courts, got nowhere. Just last December, after 20 years behind bars, parole board denied him freedom.
There was no public reason given for the decision, but 2020 obtained this transcript of that parole hearing, and in it is a shocking revelation. To the parole board, Barenboim said, I wanted her to stop yelling at me, and I attacked her. When he's asked, how did you attack her? He responds, I strangled her. Barenboim goes on to say, I went flying. I opened the door and then took her body out of the airplane over the ocean.
I was stunned when I heard he admitted it.
I was in shock. And I cried.
He said he killed Gail because he was immature and didn't understand how to deal with his anger. The parole board noted that at the time he was a 29-year-old medical doctor.
This is what happens so often in domestic violence cases. The victim could have been saved.
Gail's family established Gail's House at the Pace Women's Justice Center to support domestic violence victims.
My sister's body has never been found. Gail's House gave my sister a resting place. I feel my sister's spirit is here. It is warning others, inspiring others.
Our thanks to John.
You can see more of 2020's Do No Harm and all of our episodes on Hulu. And finally tonight, if you or someone you know might be struggling, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is always open. Dial 1-800-799-7233 for free, confidential assistance. We'll see you right back here same time Monday. Thanks for staying up with us. Good night, America.
Wednesday night on ABC, Brittany Griner, for the first time since being released from a Russian prison, shares her story.
You've been told to go through your bag, and you felt...
Felt the cartridge.
What were you thinking at that moment when you felt that?
My life is over right here.
Her sentence.
Just been told you're going to be 9 years in one of the worst prisons in Russia.
I was just so scared for everything, because there's just so much unknown.
Brittany Griner, Robin Roberts, Prisoner in Russia. Wednesday night at 10, 9 central on ABC.